Ideas for radio theater come from the same place all good ideas come from. Everywhere. From metaphors to folk tales to headlines. What we'll try to do here is offer a few rules for constructing plot and character. Remember two things. One, rules are made to be broken. And two, the listener is rooting for you. They want to be entertained and are willing to use their imagination to do it. First, Norman Gio and Dan Coffey.
You ever sit in a film or a story and you're wondering, where is this going? What is it about? And then once you realize what the story is, you're onto it and you're beginning to take that step, like taking sides or hooking up to your character. There are concrete steps you must establish in order to make that happen, like suspense. Well, before what precedes suspense is uncertainty. Uncertainty, there comes a point where curiosity precedes uncertainty. Curiosity is like, what is this about? When you have the audience in a forward movement saying, what is this about? They're questioning it. Once they understand what it's about, that's the point when you establish the goal of the drama. Where is it going? So only when you establish the goal do you have the basis for suspense. Because suspense is born off the uncertainty as to whether the goal will be reached or not. Now that's the main dramatic thread, and no matter what the medium or consecutive medium is to get them into that position, to establish uncertainty, to take the uncertainty as to what this story is about, to give it a goal and to let the listener decide if that goal is going to be met or not. That's where suspense is born.
Something has to happen in your piece, no matter how short it is, or we won't feel like anything, we won't feel satisfied. We won't have had our little mini orgasm by the time your piece is over.
Well, it's like any presentation. You have a beginning, middle, and end.
And if you don't say, oops, we've run out of time, so that's it. I mean, you have to do that if nothing happened. So every piece should have some kind of tension in it. And so somebody wants to do something, and somebody's trying to stop you, or somebody's trying to help you, and it doesn't work. But there has to be some sort of conflict. Then something happens to change something, and that's the end. Otherwise, all your pieces have to say, the clock on the wall says it's time to go, so join us next time for another installment of Health Tips or something. Even if it's just stupidity on stupidity, there has to be some sense of climax or resolution. It's hard to come by sometimes, and it can just be a suggestion of it. But go for that. Try to make something happen. Try to give the audience some sense of completion.
How does a storyline develop? Marjorie Van Haltern.
I do have a tendency to be very linear, and the reason is because my personal feeling is that life has structure. A life has a structure, birth, life, death, you know, a pulse, a breath. And I tend to think of things having beginnings and ends. I read a book by Simone de Beauvoir when I did a project about Simone de Beauvoir that was not very popular in this country, called All Men Are Mortal. It was a philosophical novel, and it was about a guy that was immortal and couldn't die, and how terrifying that was. And as I was reading it, I came up with the idea that for a life not to have that kind of, an organism not to have the natural structure of life is a lost soul.
So, in this case, art imitates life. But as David Osman points out, that doesn't mean the story has to be told in a straight line.
Almost any radio play, if it's well produced and interesting, you can tune in from here to here and fascinate an audience just with this much, because the dialogue will be good, you'll know who's speaking, and there'll be an action that you understand and can follow during the course of just this scene. So the idea is to make everything as strong, as real, as hot, if you like, as everything else, because each one of these points on the line is the linear structure of radio. Then as writers, you want everything to keep making sense, so by the end, the audience is, I get it all now. I see how it all comes together over the course of time. That's the non-linear structure of radio. You want to, as a writer, defeat the linearity. Because linear radio is boring. Linear radio is, that was Beethoven's fifth, and now Mozart's 22nd. You've just heard Mozart's 22nd, and now Brahms' first. And now we're going to, and then we heard, and now we're going, it's boring. Boring radio. What's interesting is Beethoven's fifth, which takes a theme, mixes it up, brings in another one, adds it up, brings it to a great climax, and then starts it all over again. That's interesting. It's nonlinear.
It's vertical. It's vertical. And radio is composed just like music. It's on a vertical, it's in a vertical pattern. Things add up just like music adds up over a period of time.
Tom Lopez.
There's a whole process that goes on unconsciously that does the writing for you, and it pops out. And that's the fun of it. The fun of it is that you don't know what's going to happen. Or, you know, you may have a plot, you may have seen the plot to the end, which is a possibility, but then the fun of it is as it comes into being.
Now, Norman gives us some rules of classical dramatic construction.
The past is the least important point of the drama. It should be looked at as the point where you're like a motivational bank. The present, since it happens so fast, it's not the place where you spend all your time in designing your story. For the future becomes the most important point for the structure. When you're designing your structure, it's in the future. It's not in the, you're not designing it. You'll find that your scenes will, if you're writing with the future in mind, to the execution, the scenes will come down right in the present, and they'll come down with purpose and sense. Let's talk about motive, intention, and goal. Here's where we begin to tie in the reasons related to, given to an intention to act. For without a reason, no character is going to act. Imagine a man walking on a road, and back that way on the road, behind him, it goes on, for all practical purposes, to the vanishing point. And that way, it goes on to the vanishing point in the future, and you see the man walking on the road. You've got to assume, you don't know anything about this person, you have to assume that this person is going someplace. You have to assume. Now, you may speculate that the car is back there with a flat tire. You may speculate all kinds of things, but you have to assume that this character is going someplace, has a purpose, has a motive, that there's an intention at play. If you can't assume that, and this person doesn't have any of those things, then this person should, by all rights, just stop, sit down in the middle of the road, and go nowhere. Right? Now, that's the line that our characters will follow. Without a doubt, they must be going someplace. There must be a motive at play, an intention at play, and a goal to be seeking with every character that you're representing. Otherwise, unless you're throwing somebody in for the sake of a metaphor, which is certainly legitimate, but be sure you're doing it for that purpose and not just doing it because, you know, accidentally. Without reason, no character will act. That person's not going to walk on that road unless there's a reason for that. Therefore, motive leads to intention, and intention leads to the execution of a set goal. Action is not possible without a cause. Action of objects are governed by physical laws. A flower pot dropped from a third-story building or a third-story window intends to fall. The cause is gravity, right? It's a law, and you'll bank on it. Actions of human beings are caused by human will. Dramatically speaking, we call these acts of human will motives. While the connection between cause and effect in physics is much simpler, it's much more defined, it's much more clear, the cause and effect relationship or the motive relationship behind human beings is less obvious. It's much more complex. So let's establish something. Let's call it pain. Let's look at the pain factor. We have to use this. And this is going to be a rule of thumb in your writing. Consider pain as the motive for your character. And I say motive with a capital T. All motive is pain. And I'll explain that. If the character feels no pain, the character will be satisfied to remain in a painless state. Okay? Therefore, pain is motive. Dramatically speaking, the human being experiences pain when he or she wants something and does not have it, or has something that they do not want. Okay. We call these two different types of motives affinity and repulsion. in the classic sense. Affinity is a desire to be united with something. Repulsion is the desire to be separated from something. Affinity might be love. Repulsion might be hatred. Once the object of motivation is either acquired or eliminated, the pain ceases to exist.
Here, Norman points out counter-intention. It's not necessarily the goal, but it's getting to the goal that makes the story.
Suspense deals in the realm of frustrations, not goals, concrete goals. That whole dynamic comes from understanding the intention, because it's the intention that you begin to build up counter-intentions to frustrate it. Yeah, and dramatically, that dynamic, once you understand the difference, you know, you have the pain factor that establishes it, the motive. Then you have the intention to do something, and the intention leads to the goal, right? If the intention gets to the goal, then when you get the goal, the pain obviously is canceled because the dramatic cycle is complete. However, the whole of the drama, the excitement of the drama, the suspense of the drama, the whole thing that's going to move the audience in a forward direction hinges on the intention that's separate from the goal. But it doesn't mean shit in the end. It doesn't mean shit. Because it's the revelation. Because when I give you this, I put you in an unusual circumstance. And in that circumstance, your character will be manifested. And when your character is manifested, and the audience likes you, and they, or dislikes you, whatever the case may be, and they begin to speculate as to what the outcome will be with you in this, and the other people that are against you, and will you overcome it, and then they're rooting for you, and that whole process, that's the story.
I think you just have to rely on some of the devices occasionally and not make them too blatant, you know, because some of the devices sometimes work. And you know, the originality is good, but only to a certain point. What I mean is, sometimes you'll consciously stay away from certain things that are traditionally done because it's, you know, it's just done and done and done, and you're just sick of it. But sometimes you have to go back to it. You use the slow fade into another scene to give your sense of time having passed, something I personally don't like, but it works. I don't like it because if you're going to write for a radio, I say don't listen to the old radio shows. Watch television, you know, because television's closer to radio than anything, I think. A classic thing that's done to us all the time is your obligatory scene. The good guy or could be the good woman, whatever it is, but we'll say the good guy because that's a classic situation, is beaten up with the odds all against him, you know, in the beginning of the show, steps into something, you know, gets the shit kicked out of him in a totally unfair way, and you wait to the end when he's going to get even. That's your obligatory scene. Wow, is that ever a controller of emotion? I mean, so all these things, these people know, and they pull it on us time after time after time.
There's another way to catch people besides familiarity. There's different ways. You can tease people, you can interest them. And it's a second way of having a door or a hook, is to just be interesting and to elicit a question.
Now, David Ossman discusses the very radio problem of narration and the importance of transitions.
Narration is expedient most of the time. It's a way of making transitions. In life, transitions are very slow. In life, transitions take years. You go crazy thinking that this, when am I going to be through this life transition here? I've been waiting for this since 1981, you know? And you think, well, now, my God, I've made it through the other side, except, of course, all of this stuff, which hasn't quite made it through the other side. Yeah, not quite. Eventually, you'll be to the other side. Well, writing radio plays is making a series of transitions over and over and over again during the course of your play, even if it all happens in a, you know, the classic Greek unity, you know, where it all happens at the same time in the same place and there is no time shifts or anything. But then you're kind of losing the great thing that radio can do, which is take you from one place to another, from one time to another. So the most expedient way of doing that is saying, the next day. Like, you know, like one of those movie things. And the more graceful, the more interesting, the more active that narration becomes. Say you put the narrator in an interesting place, doing something interesting, talking to somebody instead of just to the audience. The minute the narrator is talking to somebody, even if the somebody doesn't say anything, it's a two-scene. And you've got reaction. No, no, don't interrupt me. I have to tell you the story. But the underpinnings of it are the same. It has to get you from one place to another. The characters have to involve each other. You have to constantly iterate and then reiterate information to keep your audience with you. And you have to establish a sense of time and place in this case, always in the audience's mind.
On to character and characterization, Norman and Tom.
We must know something about a character to follow their action. But we cannot understand a character unless they act. Now, it's kind of a round-robin situation that we're dealing with. It's a little problem. It's problematic. So in order to go ahead and develop characterization, we need action. Unlike the novel, radio drama is limited in the way in which you can develop the characterization. The novel allows the writer a greater freedom to describe the character to any degree. You can take pages and pages in a novel and take the character and flesh out the character and allow the reader to take that. The reader can stop, reread it, and fix it in their mind. But you do not have that liberty when you're writing a script. You've got to expose the character, the characterization, and the characteristics through action. It's the only way. It's the only way that's possible. In drama, the freedom of the imagination is greater than in any simultaneous form, as we said. So we have to understand what the difference of character, characterization, and characteristics are. There are three elements that we usually confuse all together when we talk about the actors. Characteristics are the single factors which the character consists of. These are the little characteristics that our actors will have, that we have as people. Characterization comprises all the facts, all the little elements of the character. In an isolated sense, character is one aspect of the characterization, meaning what kind of character, and subject them to the obligatory facts. There are certain facts which must be told in the story with regards to the characterization. These are the obligatory facts. They have to come right up front. They have to be revealed early on in the story. Age, approximate age. You know, especially in radio, when you don't know what you're listening to, you have certain things that automatically establish characteristics. The sound of the voice, feminine or masculine, the age of the voice is going to establish certain things without you saying anything at all. And that represents a certain obligatory reality to the mind of the listener. The occupation, relationships to other human beings, etc. These little obligatory facts are fundamental to establish as early as possible without being contrived.
And that is a lack of sense of who it is that's saying something. That is, the writer is putting words into the mouths of these characters. And the truth of the matter is that I, as a writer, could sit here and tell you what to do and what to say, but that wouldn't be you. I don't even know you people, you know? Likewise, you know, if I'm your character and you want me to say something, okay, I'll say it, but it's going to come out flat unless you know something about who I am and what I would say. You can't tell me what to say in a situation. When you know a character, you can throw them into any kind of situation, and you don't have to worry about what they're going to say because they're going to say it. They're going to say it for you. And characters have the ability to start to become like living little entities. It's rather magical in a way, inside you or wherever they are, or hovering around you or something. And literature is filled with classic situations of like a Sherlock Holmes that is an amazing. I mean, he's more real than most people we know, right? You know, so sometimes they take on lives of their own, which are very interesting. And as you get to know someone better, you know, some characters, it's fascinating because some reveal themselves very slowly to you. And sometimes they just sit there for the longest time and you spend time trying to figure out who they are. A lot like people in real life. So, you know, some people reveal themselves very slowly. Other people are like, boom, right there.
Side actions. Again, we have main actions, side actions. seemingly unimportant side actions oftentimes are very, very effective in relating information. Let's say the mob boss that works at this packing plant kicks a small dog on the way to the car. That oftentimes is much more revealing than showing some grotesque, violent scene to establish ruthlessness on the part of the boss. This little side action, which can economically be put right into the scene, you kick the dog and you hear this, and you hear the little dog, you know, yelping away, that could shed much more on the character of the boss than establishing a whole long scene to show his ruthlessness, where he's giving you the stereotypical image of somebody that's mean and bad. And you can do it really quick, very fast, with a side action, and it becomes a very economical device. By the same token, if he's walking to the car and you know the man's worth millions of dollars and it's a Cadillac and he stoops over and picks up a penny on the ground and puts it in his pocket, you do better by doing a side action that way than setting up some contrived scene to show his wealth. You know how he got that money.
One warning about this character thing is, I warn you to probably stay away from using real people. It's a real stinker, because speak about all the stuff that you don't need and you find yourself trying to put into the script. Because, you know, we're narrowing this thing down. It's so narrow. We see such a small aspect of the person. But it's so important, because you're also, it's an obligation as a writer, because you're giving the actors something to bite into, you know, in terms of the character. Because if they don't have it, and the script is the most important part, I feel, of radio drama, because you can have really good actors doing a mediocre script, and it's not, and with great sound effects, mm-hmm. and it's going to be really difficult to make it work and make it interesting. But you can have a good script and mediocre actors, and it's going to come out a lot better, because even the mediocre actors will be raised just by the script itself and their sense of the character that's there, and so on. I really believe it. I really believe the script is, because so many times I've done productions where I didn't have a time for the script to gel or wasn't thought out, and I spent weeks editing and throwing things out and cursing and, you know, everything, and saying never again, and, you know, hitting my head against the wall and all sorts of self-abuse, you know, knowing that it was because of, you know, and even to this day I still do the same thing. Also, a lot of other things help to write, and that is deadlines. Boy, I'll tell you, you get a deadline, and it really, yeah, exactly. You know, no more bullshit, no more spending all this time developing the character. You know, that character, suddenly you got to get those lines down.
Most writers couldn't analyze their plots and characters if they had to. Why bother? Just keep these rules in the back burner and get the story down. Then, like it or not, we all have to go back and revise and edit. David tells what he looks for.
How did I judge the lines that I was cutting for time? Confusing, not funny, unimportant, and is strictly my own opinion. If he had said, no, that's really important, I would have felt stupid for having missed it. But I probably would have exceeded. See, I cut whole speeches because they went away from the action. They diverted from the action. The action was being on the radio. And in this sequel, I'm just looking at the page, the guy is recalling thinking when he was a child, listening to the radio, that there were teeny-weeny people in it. A wonderful image that we've all had. I used to think they lived on in the radio. They lived in the radio. Whenever you turned it on, there they were, playing and singing. Tiny orchestras, miniature jazz combos, itty-bitty pop singers. And the wife says, stupid boy, how old were you? And he says, 4. Cause and effect were still murky. Magic played a big part in my worldview. Out, 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 out. Cut to Mirka saying, we can't be in the radio. He's dream. Back to the action. Because you get down a meander and you've lost your audience. It's interesting, works in a book, nice to know for character points, but cut to the action.
Here's another example.
And the original lines were, God, have a seat, Michelle, thank you. God, sighs as sits, creak of chair, shuffles paper. Busy this morning, always a little hectic starting a new manager out here. Michelle says, I remember. God says, drink? Michelle says, sure. My eye flew to drink. And immediately, have a seat, thank you, all goes. She gets in the audience, God says, drink, because that's where the action starts. Oh, yeah, sound of the water. He says, it's spring water from the planet Hydora. It's one of my perks. And immediately we're... Immediately, see? It's funny. Come in, sit down is not funny. Come in, sit down is stuff that we hardly even say in real life. So in editing scripts, find what the flow of the story is.
That is, you're throwing things out, you're getting it to work in a way that sound-wise is starting to work. You realize there's lines that aren't necessary, you thought they were, they're no longer there, better. You know, editing usually always improves things, you know. But it's nice if you're the one that's editing. You know, even though somebody else may be right, you know, it's nice that if you're involved in the process.
Don't let a word go by if you can make it better. Not a word.
Consider the possibility of producing your own work. Tom and Dan, Dr. Science to his friends, tell how they got started.
But there's so few people producing that I really encourage as many of you as possible to take on the task as producer. Because this stuff is no good when it's piling up on your desk or shelf. This stuff is made to be heard, you know. And even if it's getting a bunch of friends together in front of a microphone. I mean, that's how I got started, with a tape machine.
I started writing these kind of stoned radio plays of indeterminate length about indeterminate things, and found that I could get people to play them like after midnight on Saturday night at community radio stations. And that was kind of fun, but it's more fun to have something that's actually played regularly all over the place. And I found the way to do that is to come up with short nuggets that are able to be dropped in holes in other people's programs. Okay, Dr. Science sounds like a real public radio feature. You know, the music kind of almost sounds right, and a guy talking in a deep voice kind of almost sounds right. And if you're not paying any attention, you just think you're listening to public radio. And then you go, wait a minute, that didn't make any sense. So, and some people say, well, how can you do this? It's too subtle. You know, I get the joke, but what about those people that don't? You're misinforming them. I've had people tell me that. So it's by taking the controls and twisting them slightly that you get tremendous effect.
And finally, David, Tom, and Marjorie.
Try not to write any more in genre forms. And don't start out writing a hard-boiled detective story. Don't start out writing in the old radio genre forms. And I say this as somebody who really enjoys that form, loves to do it, and in fact do it all the time. We will be helping the art more if we don't do that.
Examine what you think are the rules and test them. It is time for us to create mutations, okay? We're reinventing this again. We have tremendous potential to go in any number of directions. I don't see any particular form as better than another.
It's the chance to whisper in the ear of thousands of people driving in their cars. A chance to enter their psychology, to enter their consciousness on a very intimate level.
We hope this tape has helped and encouraged you to write for radio theater. A well-written, imaginative script will always find a home. Our thanks go to Marjorie Van Haltren, Tom Lopez, David Osman, Norman Gio, and Dan Coffey for their participation in MRTW workshops. The Midwest Radio Theater Workshop is funded in part by the National Endowment for the Arts, the Missouri Arts Council, the City of Columbia Arts Commission, and KOPN FM Radio. MRTW is directed by Diane Hunneke and is located at 915 East Broadway, Columbia, Missouri, 65201. This cassette was produced and edited by Brian Price, and I'm Roger Studi. Thank you, and keep riding. Mm-hmm.